pretty appropriate song for our next guest. Back here on Darren, Donnick, and Chase. Darren McFarland, Willie Donnick, and Chase McCabe with you here on this Monday morning. And yes, they are headed back to Omaha. We head over to West End. Let's bring in Vanderbilt baseball coach, the man, the myth, the legend, Tim Corbin. He's on the line with us after they beat East Carolina 4-1 and punched their ticket into the College World Series. Corbs, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, Deke. I'm doing good. Thank you.
So what did it mean to you and your boys, considering what we talked about last year? I remember conversations with you in 2020 when your season was canceled. There was no College World Series. There was no Super Regionals. There was no regional. There was no playoffs whatsoever. And so you didn't get the opportunity to defend your national championship. And for you to have that year off, basically, it was canceled when you were getting ready to start conference play, and to now have that opportunity and to get back to that place that was so memorable 2 years ago, what did that mean to you and your kids?
Well, it's very fulfilling. It'll probably set in once you get out there. You know, Maggie and I were out there last summer during the break, and I guess it was July, and we went out there just because we wanted to be there again because we had missed it. And it was, it's kind of a somber feeling. The streets were barren. The streets were torn up a little bit. There was no one there, and it was a skeleton of itself. And I'm talking about Omaha, the city, and just the bounce and the fact that you've got an opportunity to go back there in this particular year and help rejuvenate the tournament and get it back to feeling what it once was is certainly special. I think a lot of these kids will get out there and not understand really in full capacity what they have in front of them, and that's okay because the innocence that they have is very healthy for them. But at the same time, it's very fulfilling to be part of this group of eight and in this particular year.
Boy, East Carolina didn't make it easy for you guys, did they? Of course, it's not supposed to be easy. It's the Super Regionals, but for you guys, what did it? How were you guys able to keep them? You know, we're watching all these games, and Arkansas in game one puts up 21. Tennessee and LSU, it's a slugfest yesterday, and Tennessee puts up 15. You're seeing all these home runs and runs being scored. East Carolina can do that. Certainly Arizona did it all season, scoring a ton of runs. How did you hold East Carolina down to one run in the Super Regional?
I guess two words, rocker and lighter. That's three words.
It's a good answer.
Well, I mean, that helps. It goes a long way, and I know that I'm not minimizing the strength of everyone else either. That I'm not saying that at all. But I think, you know, if you're gonna have any relevance in this tournament, you better have pretty good starting pitching. And our starting pitching was better than pretty good because they had to hold a team down that scored a lot of runs against a lot of good teams this year. And in the fact that this series was completely different than what we did against Georgia Tech, because there were runs in that particular series. There were no runs here. The runs were very expensive. They were difficult to come by. So it just meant that not only in holding them down, but you had to hold them to a certain level so your offense had enough to scratch to win or to produce a positive outcome on the scoreboard. And that's what we did. And certainly Luke Murphy and Nick Maldonado pitched well, too, in relief. I mean, they pitched combined three innings, two games, which is not a lot, which means your starters had to go 14 and a third, which they did, in order to kind of get us to where we were. But it's pitching. And then you got to play defense. And then our runs, they were few and far between. But we got a big hit with two outs several times during the course of the tournament, and that was the difference.
Can I talk to you about, or I want you to talk to us and our audience about your freshman. I mean, this is a roster that I have to believe, and we've talked enough with you over the years. It's not easy for freshmen to get in there and get all the quality playing time that Enrique Bradfield has done this year. He is fun to watch. I'll take three of whatever he takes. He's got a high-energy guy, fun to watch. Tell us a little bit more about this young man and how could he be that effective and be out there as much as he was. He played every game this year, right, as a freshman?
Yeah, he was the only one, Darren.
Wow.
He And he's, you know, he's not that big a guy yet. And I say that with respect because he's not, you know, he's about 160, 65 pounds and, probably right now a little bit less than that, but he has, he's played every game. He's the only player on our team to play every game and he stayed healthy. He's been dinged up a little bit too. And I think, as you guys know, when you hit the ground 50 times on stolen bases, that takes a lot out of your body. You know, I think it's the reason why even at the pro level, there's not as many stolen bases anymore, just because of the wear and tear it takes on your body. Not to mention how many times that you got to dive back to first base, which is numerous when he's on. So he just has developed over the course of the year. And he is a very, very confident young man. He plays the game with a lot of fire. It's kind of an old-time baseball look to it. You know, I know he wears number 51, and I didn't put it on him because of Willie McGee or any other reason. It was just that was his number. That was the number available. But he does play like a kid that you would see. There's a little bit of Clemente to him. There's a little bit of Willie McGee to him. There's Lou Brock to him. There's Maury Wills. You know, it's just that. You know, there's even a Pete Rose element to him because he plays so damn hard. And when you get guys who play with so much passion like that, it has a runoff effect to the people around you. And he does. He plays the game with great innocence and passion. And I just hope he continues to restore that innocence that he has, because if he does, then, you know, he can be as good as he wants to. And, you know, he's going to get stronger. He's going to learn more about the game. But he's got an acumen already that kind of helps him and bring out his skills, and he just is attacking in every bit of him, in every fiber of him.
Yeah, if I were Ray Fosse, I would not be behind the plate. You're right. This is a good reference. So, yeah. Pete Rose, I'd be worried about him too. What, speaking of, real quick, the glove, the now when, you know, they're getting on. You just talked about all the stolen bases and the throwbacks to the to first base or whatever. When did that – I miss the whole – when did that become the thing where now that's what everybody has? And
you're talking about the oven mitt.
Yeah, the oven mitt,
right.
Yeah.
Yep.
How did that all come about?
I think it came back a few years ago, and I first saw – I remember Buddy Reed. I don't know if you remember Buddy Reed. He was a kid from Rhode Island who played at Florida. And he got on first base, and he put on this thing, and I thought, what is that? And it was a contraption that took him a few minutes to put on, because you have to really put it over your hand and a little bit of your arm too, and your wrist, and then you wrap it together. And really what it was a contraption made, and I don't know by who, for base dealers who like to run that slide head first into the bag so they wouldn't jam up their fingers. And it's certainly a help. And it probably has saved a lot of people a lot of time and digits, you know, in terms of broken bones and so on, especially on turf, where you gain a lot of momentum when you slide into the base. So that was developed, I would say, about 6-7 years ago. And now you see a lot of base runners wear them. And, you know, we have to here, too, because Alex Blandino, who's now in the big leagues, we're playing in, was it 2014, Super Regional here, and he slid into third base on a triple. And when he got up, because it was 95 degrees, all the skin on his left hand was completely taken off.
Ooh.
And he was of no good. It was done. He was done. You know, he played, but he wasn't the same player for the next two games. And what happens with our turf is you need to cover your hands when you slide, because whether you go butt first or head first, you're dragging your hands, and the temperature of the turf and the sliding and the friction just causes a lot of damage. So, yeah, that's what that glove does right there.
Whew. Tim Corbin is with us. Speaking of slides, Corbs, you know, one of the slides of the year has got to be Bradfield's dive into home plate to that back sliver of the base to avoid the tag, where it looked like the throw did beat him, right? And you're thinking there's no way he's going to make it, but somehow he did. The situational hitting, being able to put a ball in play and then having a slide like that, it made so much difference, as you were talking about, in the context of how runs were at a premium this weekend.
Right, and that was it. We scored both our runs on what we call red zone offense, where runner at third base, less than two, and the batter puts the ball in play. Vaz did it earlier in the game, but the infield was back. This one was a little different just because infield was in, and you got Enrique at third base, and if it's anyone else, they get thrown out. And to your point, Willie, when we talked about that, the contact play has to be such that you're anticipating contact, you're walking into contact as the ball is arriving at the zone, you're walking that way, and when it's hit, you got to be moving. And I say, when it's hit, you say, well, of course you wouldn't keep moving on a fly ball, a line drive. Well, initially you would until you read the flight of the ball, then you fight to get back. But if you hesitate 1 second on a contact play, you're done. And Mookie Betts pulled it off so many times in the World Series, and, you know, Enrique did kind of the same thing. But not to keep belaboring this, but I told him initially before he scored, I said, go feet first into the plate if the catcher has the plate covered. And otherwise, you know, you can go away from the plate, slide head first. Well, the catcher just gave him just enough of a sliver, as you said, of the plate to open it up for him, and he slid to the backside of the plate and dragged the left hand to the plate before the tag was made. And it was just a great play. It was a great burst, it was a great read, and it was a great slide. And if those three things don't happen, he's out. And that's, you know, a difference in a ball game a lot of times.
Javier Vaz has really come on in this postseason for you. I love stories like that for somebody that's been on a team for a while. He's had to really wait his turn. You got a lot of depth on your roster, and he was ready when he got the number called here. That's just, you got to love the perseverance and the payout there.
Yeah, you do, and you said it, because you have to. Your spirit can't be dampened through the year. If your spirit's dampened through the year because you're not playing, you don't get to that point, because what happens is your spirit's dampened enough to where you don't improve. And I think the player that improves, they just see opportunity at some point in time. They recognize that it's not on their watch. It's going to take care of itself. And you talk about that through the years, but there's a human element to this where kids do get disappointed and they do get frustrated. And internally, it kind of brings them down a little bit. And guys like Lanive and Vaz, that's never been the case. Tyler Campbell going back to 2014, never was the case, because they get that moment and then they survive in that moment because they ready themselves. And I always talk about, you know, the backup quarterback to Tom Brady. The backup quarterback to Tom Brady is calling plays with him throughout the year. Because if he's not, when Brady gets hurt and you get your opportunity, you're not ready for that moment. And if you're ready for the moment, it's only because you've been playing with Tom Brady. And I think for kids like Javi, they had to, because, you know, certainly now you go out to Omaha and you're covering in the outfield, the Grand Canyon, you can't play with a slow outfield out there. So he's got to be a piece of our outfield moving forward. But he's that guy who makes contact. He's better with two strikes than he is zero. He's a good defender in the outfield. He plays second base for us. And I think the best thing I can say about him is he's a positive life force. I mean, his spirit is always, always positive, and that's why he's in.
You were able to get through the regional and the super regional with the minimum amount of innings, except, of course, for the epic game, the 11-inning, five-hour game against Georgia Tech, where you had to use a lot of people. But, you know, in doing so, there's some depth pitchers that probably need a little bit of work between now and the time you guys take the field in Omaha, where you're going to start your rotation over. How do you try to do that with some of your arms like Christian Little and maybe even Patrick Riley, who didn't get to pitch this last week? And what's the maintenance like for Scott Brown there?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, some of those kids will throw today, but then guys like Riley and Little will get touches tomorrow against hitters. We have to provide that for them, because it's that unique experience that you get where they didn't get a chance to pitch. In Christian Little's case, he hasn't pitched since the SEC tournament, that first game. So it's been a long time for him. And he had to ready himself to be in relief this past weekend, which has never got to him. And Riley didn't get that third start, which is good, because we won in two games. But at the same time, you got to give him a little bit of coverage too. So he'll get some volume tomorrow against some hitters, and it'll be a light touch. And then after that, he just readies himself for his next opportunity. But we'll do that tomorrow. We'll have a short scrimmage. Won't be a long scrimmage, but it'll be enough where those pitchers can see the hitters. And the guys like Carter Young, who really need to swing more because of the injury, taking him away from his at-bats. He just needs a couple of touches as well. So we'll do that tomorrow.
And do you think Colwick at that point, or at some point between now and the time you go out there, will become available, or is it still lingering that bruise he's got?
Yeah, it's lingering. It hasn't come back as quickly as you would want it to. It's really a shame because that kid, you know, we brought him out in 19 as kind of an ancillary piece. He wasn't on the roster, but I brought him out because I told him, I said, your eyes need to see this because at some point in time, you're going to be in the middle of it. And sure enough, now he's in the middle of it again. He's been taken out. But, I just don't know. It's not coming back as quick as we want to. But, you know, who knows? Maybe the next few days something will happen. He's going to try to do some things. He's been playing defense, but even then, he's not able to squeeze his glove like he wants to. And he's a tough kid, so you just know that something's just not right. But we've put an MRI on it. We've done a lot of testing on it, and it could be some small fractures, but nothing is really showing up. And I think it's quite frustrating. Well, I know it's quite frustrating to him.
We're talking to Tim Corbin, Vanderbilt baseball coach, as they get ready to head to Omaha once again for the College World Series. You brought up Carter Young, and that's who I wanted to ask you about, because we've talked to you about him and then his injury, battling through the shoulder, and he certainly, you can tell, has been feeling that. But what did that hit for him on Saturday? What do you think that kind of did for his confidence of, even though he's still battling through this, he's still banged up, he was able to really come through at a key moment?
Certainly confidence for sure. I just think when you get moments like that, it's just he's a competitive kid. He's a very competitive kid, and he's come up short here in the last couple of weeks just because he's still working through an injury. But that's it. Still doesn't matter. You know, there's no excuse in his mind that he should be coming up short that way. And I think what it does is it just fuels the body. It fuels the mind more than anything. It gives you that satisfaction of, okay, I can still do this. I can still pull this off. And he did. I mean, there's a concentration level to that with two strikes. You know, he'd been sitting on breaking ball and, you know, not able to put it in play. And then he fouls one off down the line and he's really early on it. And then the next pitch, they, you know, add some velocity to the ball and he just puts it in the gap. So I think more than anything, it just gives you mental endurance. It continues to kind of build your baseball self-esteem, where someone offers you some resistance and you fight back and you're able to counterpunch. And that's what he did. So good for him moving forward, because that was such a big hit. That was such a big relief for our team.
You had him in the regional when he was coming back down in the bottom of the order, and you moved him back for the super regional to batting second. How much can that, whether it's Carter specifically in this situation or any player that you're trying to either get them back from an injury or help them with confidence, just moving them to a spot that's more familiar, how much can that help that player moving forward from a confidence standpoint?
Well, that's what we were hoping. We were hoping just to get that lineup back to what it used to be and what it was like. It's like the gang's all here now. So once you got him to the second spot, you felt like you're doing something for the kid, but you're also doing something for the team, which is the most important thing. But I think getting him up there is, you know, Chase, it's like he's switch hitter. So if they make a pitching change, then he can reverse it. He is a pretty good right-handed hitter. In some cases, he's got more loft from the left side, more line drive striking ability from the right side, but there's a lot of contact, and there wasn't as much contact this past weekend with him from the right side. But you feel like you can kind of diffuse pitching situations too with him up there. So we're going to ride him out now. I mean, he's in that position, and he's going to use this week to fuel more confidence, and I'm sure he will. But he always brings defense, and I think that's the one thing about catching and shortstop position is you'll take what they can give you offensively. And Carter certainly has given us some big moments this year offensively. 15 home runs is a lot for shortstop and at any level, but his defense is worth the price of admission. I mean, the fact that he can pick up the routine plays but then make the extra play is a big deal.
Tim, you know that sometimes the worst enemy to a kid is themselves, trying to push it too far and having to know when to tell them, hey, you're going too far, you've done everything you could, now it's time for somebody else to step up. But how difficult is it to balance that this time of year, whether it's a pitcher that you're looking and you can tell they're getting tired, and knowing where the line is of it's too long, it's too much, knowing that you also have to preserve them for later on?
Yeah, that's always a balancing point. You know, I think I think what happens is, well, I know it happens, is you bring your team great strength when you rely on other pieces besides your big horses. I mean, if you're always riding your horses and you never allow someone else to come in to, like, grab the baton and give them their moment, then your team always feels like, okay, the only time we have a chance, you send those mixed messages to your team that we can only do this if such and such is out there, which is not true. That's not true. We've shown several times that you don't have to be at full capacity as a roster or as a starting lineup to have the same people out there to compete and win. And I think it's just getting guys to have great awareness of themselves when they can speak to you in a truthful way, that they know that they can't go any further. It's almost like that fine line of knowing they want to compete, they don't want to get taken out, and then that line where they say, okay, I want to stay in, but you know, this is where I am right now. And you know, with Rocker, you can see that. You know when that kid has kind of, he's had enough. He would never tell you he's had enough, but you know when that kid has given what he has. The same with Jack, too. They're such good competitors. They leave everything on the field, and you can kind of see when they get off the field, their face is hollowed out, and they've just had enough, and you got to save them from themselves, as you said. But that's when you have to rely on other people that can pick up the team, and we've done that at various points throughout the year. We've done a lot, actually, because we had a lot of position players that were taken out of play during the course of the year, and our team kind of backed themselves up by other guys stepping in and taking ownership of those spots.
Any idea what day your first game will be?
Saturday.
Saturday.
Just don't know, game one or two. Yeah, so we'll we'll start that thing off. But, we're looking forward to it. I'm just looking forward to getting the kids out there so they can – we're leaving Wednesday, so it'll be good to get them out there and get them in the middle of it. And very, very happy for them. Just like it is. It's Christmas, you know. It's great to see your kids enjoy something so much and show so much emotion and being part of it. I love it for them. It's such a great moment.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Really appreciate your time, Tim. Soak it all up. I hope everybody has a blast out there. We'll certainly be watching from here, and we look forward to talking to you soon. Best of luck out there.
Yeah, thank you very much. You guys are always nice. Thank you very much.
All right, is Tim Corbin. Vanderbilt, looks like it'll be Saturday. They'll get things cranked up in Omaha for the College World Series. We'll come back and discuss something that happened yesterday that we were hinting at the beginning. On the other side, Tron Davenport at 11 o'clock. We'll talk with Vince at noon. J.P. Arencibia at 1 o'clock. A loaded show here today. Round two in the basketball playoffs is no joke. And we've been watching this all play out as the Bucks try to make their way back into that series against the Nets. This is where the contenders are separated from the pretenders. And DraftKings Sportsbook is putting you courtside with a chance to turn just $1 of your money into $100. That's right, 100-1 odds on any basketball game. And all you have to do is pick any team that's still on the hunt for the trophy. And if that team wins, you will receive $100 in free credits. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use that promo code 1025GAME. And when you sign up, turn $1 into $100 in free credits. Bet on the basketball team of your choice to win their next game. And if they do, you will claim that $100 in free credits. Once again, though, you have to use that promo code 1025GAME. This is for a limited time only, and it's at DraftKings Sportsbook, and you must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only. Wager paid out in site credits. Restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789.